The North-South Axis of American Cultural Conflict. To colonial officials in Oliver Cromwell's London, the cultural polarization in America would have been visible enough. The Puritans and Pilgrims of New England supported Parliament in the English Civil War, while the two plantation colonies to the south, Maryland and Virginia, took the King's side. This now all but forgotten split was the forerunner of many others. Several generations ago, the cleavage was dismissed as a myth, a pre-Civil War striving by both North and South to find deep-seated antecedents for re-emerging mutual disdain. In 1961, as society in the television era United States supposedly moved toward homogenization and smoothed its regional disparities, the notion of remote divisions over the English Civil War was described as fictional sociology by historian William R. Taylor in his study, Cavalier and Yankee. Alas, for today's riven America, that cultural requiem turned out to be sounded prematurely. For one thing, the South's sectional consciousness was resurging by the last half of the 20th century, not fading. For another, scholars began to mine newly accessible resources for evidence of 17th and 18th century regional rivalry and awareness. Far from being geopolitical fiction, the Cavalier Roundhead divisions were heartfelt. Hundreds of men from Massachusetts and Connecticut sailed back to England in the 1640s to fight on the Puritan side against Charles I, while Royalist Virginia welcomed Cavalier emigres and expelled its Puritans. Fighting took place in the colonies themselves as well. In 1655, Anglican-Catholic forces in Maryland were defeated by Puritan foes at the Battle of the Severn near Annapolis, Maryland. A century later, persisting distrust almost undercut the American Revolution. Archival gleanings from the 1775 to 1777 squabbling inside Congress, within the military, and over the Articles of Confederation establish the geography. The Second Continental Congress had sectional prejudice running from north to south as well as from south to north. While John Adams castigated Southerners for their alleged fear of New England's designs of independency, an American republic, Presbyterian principles, and 20 other things, he nevertheless admitted his own local attachment, hardness, prejudice in favor of New England, where the people are purer English blood, less mixed with Scotch, Irish, Dutch, French, Swedish than any other. According to one historian, Southern fears of Northern domination were strengthened by suggestions that Congress move northward from Philadelphia. The distrust ran so deep in 1775 that some at least considered the creation of two grand republics by Congress, one Southern and one Northern, as a real possibility. Fear mingled with dislike. In 1777, Edward Rutledge of South Carolina objected to the first draft of the Articles of Confederation because its terms would subordinate the South to the government of the Eastern New England provinces. A decade later, negotiation of the federal constitution nearly failed because of bipolar rivalry. Some participants doubted that the South and North could ever work out a union. Alexander Hamilton opined that if a split came, New York and Pennsylvania would be drawn to each other and then to New England. James Monroe, in turn, worried that if Pennsylvania took the northern side in a split, proximity to the new border would endanger his home state of Virginia. From the constitutional deliberations of 1787, James Madison distilled a political essence. The great danger to our general government is the great southern and northern interests on the continent being opposed to each other. The states were divided into different interests at the Constitutional Convention, not by their difference of size, but by other circumstances, the most material of which resulted partly from climate, but principally from the effects of their having or not having slaves. Hamilton appended other occupational differences. Northerners were more commercial and navigating, Southerners more agrarian and equestrian. To explain Southern distinctiveness, latter-day scholars have dissected federal census data for the 1790 to 1860 period. Three-quarters of the pre-1845 New England population was of lowland English extraction, while some three-quarters of the white Southerners hailed from Britain's Celtic fringe, Scotland, Ireland, Wales, and Cornwall, or from the kindred uplands of northern and western England. These disparate origins, the argument went, explained much of the culture. Unlearned, hot-blooded, combative, warlike, prevalent below the Mason-Dixon line. Frank Owsley, in his well-known Plain Folk of the Old South, argued that these distinctions made the Southern people a genuine folk long before the Civil War.